much.
Thank you, Council.
Next item, please. Item number 250, resolution.
Approve and terminate limited tax exemptions for properties under the Home Buyer Opportunity Limited Tax Exemption Program.
Colleagues, the Portland Housing Bureau administers the city's tax exemption programs, as you're aware. The Home Buyer Opportunities Limited Tax Exemption Program, known as the HOLTI program, provides a 10-year tax exemption for low to moderate income home buyers, making home ownership more obtainable for families in Portland. Home builders apply for the tax exemption prior to starting construction of their new homes. The Housing Bureau approves builder applications through filing a resolution with the council several times a year. 54 properties are being approved for the program through this resolution. Homes with exemptions must sell below the annual sales price cap to income-qualified home buyers planning to be owner-occupiers of the home. Provided these conditions are met, the exemption continues for as long as the 10-year term. When developers sell a home over the price limit or to a buyer who does not qualify, or when a home is not owner-occupied, the exemption is removed. Before an exemption is terminated, owners have the opportunity to appeal the decision made by the city. Within this resolution, 19 properties' tax exemptions are being removed. Today we have the Portland Housing Bureau's Development Incentives Program Manager, Dori Van Bakkel, here to answer questions. We obviously have Shannon Callahan, the Housing Bureau Interim Director, here as well. But first, I'd like to offer an amendment to add Trang Thai's property to Exhibit A's approval list. This property was inadvertently left off of the original Exhibit A.
Second.
So let me read the full motion as was scribed out by legal counsel. The total number of exemptions needs to be updated from 53 to 54, and the estimated foregone revenue from $106,954 to $108,972. The list needs to be updated to add number 54 with a record number of 5592-17. The property owner's name is Trang Thai. The tax account number is R563350, and the property address is 8935 Southeast Harney Court, zip code 97266. The exemption type is A37. We have a motion from the mayor, a second from Commissioner Fish. We will leave that open for the presentation and for any public testimony, and then we'll come back to take a vote on the amendment as well as the resolution. So we'll start with Shannon. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioner. Shannon Callahan, the Portland Housing Bureau. As the Mayor mentioned, this is an important tool to incenting home ownership in the private market. We come to you approximately three times a year to list new homes eligible for the exemption and remove homes that are ineligible for the exemption. I am joined by Dori Van Bakkel, our Development Incentives Team Manager, who's here to answer any specific questions you may have.
I have two questions.
Commissioner Fish.
One is, did you receive any objections from any of the property owners whose tax abatement is being terminated?
We did not have any request an appeal, no.
Okay. And number two, could you remind me of the history of this? Was this program previously administered by the Portland Development Commission?
Yes, it was.
So for the benefit of two colleagues that are relatively new, these tax abatement programs, once upon a time, were administered by the Portland Development Commission. There was a certain amount of controversy in the community about the level of oversight and transparency. When we created the Portland Housing Bureau, those responsibilities came to the Housing Bureau, which now has dedicated people that review these things. And I can remember many, many years ago, Shannon, you can too, when you'd have a room filled with people that wanted to testify on this or had issues. And I think it's a reflection on how well this is being administered by the Bureau and how transparent the process is, that this has now become a routine matter on our calendar. And I want to just compliment staff for the work you're doing to administer this program.
Thank you very much. Both Sharon Johnson and Marilyn Hurtley do great work on the team. So thank you.
Commissioner Very good. Any further comments or questions? Any testimony on this item?
No one signed up.
Very good. With regard to the amendment, please call the roll.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The amendment's adopted. To the main resolution, please call the roll.
Fritz.
First resolution, sorry. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Thanks to the Housing Bureau for your great work on this. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted as amended. Next item, number 251.
Approve interim use of the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program to capture opportunities for affordable housing in housing developments not subject to inclusionary housing and amend administrative rules.
Colleagues, today we're taking up a plan that addresses the projects that were in the pipeline before the inclusionary housing program was enacted. We have an affordability crisis here in the city of Portland. We have declared a housing emergency, and that's why the city of Portland enacted inclusionary housing requirements in the first place. Today, we're taking up this program for the projects that are not required to build affordable housing. And I want to make sure that we can capture as many affordable units from that pipeline as possible. This is about getting more affordability, getting as much affordability as we can for Portlanders. I supported the creation of the inclusionary housing program. I'm tracking it closely, and I want to make sure that it is an effective tool as we move forward. However, there are many projects that entered the development pipeline prior to inclusionary housing. The projects total approximately 19,000 units of housing, and none of them are subject to inclusionary housing. My administration has struggled with this question. How do we get more affordable units into the projects that are already in the pipeline and not subject to inclusionary housing? And most importantly, how do we get those units right now instead of years from now? This is not an academic question. We're in a housing crisis, and the need exists now, and the public expects us to act now. The Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption, or MULTI, is a proven tool that we can use to reach back into the pipeline of housing projects. Projects that are moving through the system as we speak, projects that are going to be built, and make sure that some of those units become affordable units. Not doing anything means that all of the units will be brought onto the market at prevailing market rate. Not doing anything means we lose an opportunity to ensure that we're taking the housing crisis seriously. With the ordinance before you, I propose we use MULTI to incentivize those building housing in Portland to include affordable housing in those projects. The program includes sensible safeguards. For example, these incentives will only be available for 2 years. Also, the total amount of incentives over the life of the program cannot exceed an amount valued at $3 million, above $3 million. Third, and I offer the following amendment, only pre-inclusionary housing developments with an estimated first year of foregone revenues of $500,000 or less will be approved. Only vested projects with an estimated first year of foregone revenue of $500,000 or less are eligible for an exemption. Do I have a second on that motion?
Second.
Do you have it in writing, Matt?
We can get you that information in writing momentarily.
So, Mayor.
Commissioner Fish.
I have an additional amendment that I've reviewed with your office and obtained your concurrence, which is to remove the emergency clause.
Could I hold off on that for 1 second, but I'll remember it's there. With this amendment that we have just moved and seconded by Commissioner Fish, for the record, we can ensure the program is available to multiple projects and that no one project will take a majority of the total value of the incentives. Our housing staff is going to be providing more detailed information on this strategy as part of their presentation, and they'll touch on why we think the $500,000 cap is the right amount for the cap. Commissioner Fish has moved that we remove the emergency clause to
second.
The ordinance. There's a second from Commissioner Fritz. So we now have two amendments on the table. And at this point, I'll turn this over to Interim Director Callahan and Matt Scheibold and the Portland Housing Bureau, who are here to present. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioner. Shannon Callahan from the Portland Housing Bureau. As the Mayor mentioned, the inclusionary housing went into effect approximately 1 year ago. We saw 19,000 units coming into the pre-IZ pipeline. That represents 42% of all multifamily development that we've seen in the last 20 years. So it is a significant number of units. As of February of 2018, we still have approximately 10,000 in the permit process.
Madam Director?
Yes.
You know, for people that are not housing insiders, would you just briefly explain what it means to be vested?
So, Commissioner, that means that you met the legal requirements before the date that the inclusionary housing was effective, which was February 1st of 2017. That can be met in a variety of different ways, either with a permit, a application for land use action, or a permit application.
And just to put it in context, because 19,000 units seems like a big number.
Yes.
I think I've heard in a prior hearing that that is the equivalent of at least 3 years of development activity or more.
That would be the equivalent of three of our highest years that we've ever seen in the city of Portland. So it's not an equivalent that would be average to what we would typically see over a period of time. But in our biggest of biggest booms, that is more than three times what we would have seen.
Thank you.
So we worked on this proposal at the direction of Mayor Wheeler and our Portland Housing Advisory Commission. Our commission was very interested in finding solutions to incent the pipeline as well. This proposal was brought before that group at the beginning of this year, which they unanimously endorsed bringing to this council. So as the mayor mentioned, we have before you a slightly modified version of the previous voluntary multi-program, which was a successful program in place for a number of years. As the mayor mentioned, it does have sideboards on the proposal, including time limitations, cost limitations, and now the eligibility of the project size itself. I would like to note that this is all within the agreed-upon cap that we have with Multnomah County. There would be no additional fiscal impact to any other taxing jurisdiction beyond what we've already previously agreed. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dory Van Bockel, who is the Development Incentives Team Manager, to talk about some details of the program. And then Matthew Scheibold will review our analysis of the costs and the benefits of providing this tax exemption.
Sure. So to provide a quick summary of what the program makes available to developers to use and showing how it's similar to the prior multi-program before inclusionary housing went into effect, as the multi is a tool as one of the incentives provided through inclusionary housing. So,
to clarify, do we sure. still have that? We still have that program.
We have that program as a paired tool with the inclusionary housing program. And so this makes some interim use of the same code of the multi with a little bit of changes from how it's used through inclusionary housing.
And that program has a rolling $15 million over 5 years or $3 million. Is
yes.
this an additional $3 million?
No, this would be encompassed within that existing cap with its own limitation on how many units could be approved through this use within that larger cap.
And what has been our utilization under the existing program?
So the existing program now is through the inclusionary housing. You know, previously, we have some information that Matt will go through last few years, though, that shows the utilization of the multi that is similar to what we would be enacting through this ordinance.
Dory, just to follow up on that, because you have this wonderful chart, it says the exemption time frame is 10 years. I seem to recall that from time to time, the council has extended the 10-year period, but I think it's been a discretionary act. Is that correct? It's not part of the program?
Yes. Previously, if there were projects with continued affordability, we had on occasion extended the exemption for just those affordable units.
And we have that the council retains that
it's
authority.
Not within the current code for the multi-program because it didn't fit very well within the inclusionary housing calibration that we performed to enact that program.
So it would have to be, the council would, in the next couple of years, would have to affirmatively include that option in any code rewrite?
Potentially, but the state statute limits us to a 10-year duration, so they would have to reapply, a development would have to reapply to the city. So we would not only need enacted code language, but we'd need them to reapply, and usually we'd have them do that closer to the time of the expiration.
And one of the reasons this has come up in the past is that because of the significant need for housing at the 60% level, is the prospect of a renewal, does it make it more attractive for someone to choose that to begin with? And I don't know the answer to that question.
I would imagine that folks, that there would be some indication that would be enticing. But right now the state statute is set to sunset, so we could not commit until that statute was reauthorized.
Reauthorization by the legislature and whatever policymaking we do?
Exactly.
Thank you.
So to just give that quick summary then, so of the 10 years exemption time frame, the affordability period is the same at 10 years as well. And differing a little bit from how the program was before, we've set the income level for the restricted units at 20% at 60% of area median income for projects designed and built to be less than 5-to-1 FAR. And then at 20% at 80% of area median income for any projects designed and built over 5-to-1 FAR. And the reason for the difference is the type of building and the construction cost to build a project over 5-to-1 FAR results in much higher market rents and overall cost to construction, making the feasibility of those projects with the different rent types makes sense at those two different levels.
And since we're inventing this program, we don't have to mirror the inclusionary housing.
So that same type of that we looked at through inclusionary housing, where there's different income percentage levels around the city, but the 5-to-1 FAR bar is one that's used through the calibration of the inclusionary housing program as well. In the prior program, we used it based on market rents in the building, but this is a much more subjective or objective way of reviewing the projects without having the manipulation potentially of what's submitted as the market rents.
Okay, so FAR is floor area ratio, and it roughly translates to the number of stories or different floors, right?
Right.
So in our inclusionary housing rules, it was 20% at 60%?
No, it's actually income. So inside the Central City and Gateway Plan districts, for buildings that are 5-to-1 FAR or above, the restriction levels are either 20% at 80 or 10% at 60 with a full tax exemption. And then outside of the Central City and Gateway Plan districts or for any buildings anywhere below 5-to-1 FAR, the requirements are only, or it's only provided with a multi or a tax exemption on the affordable units.
At 20% of 60.
Or it would be 10% at 60.
So I guess that's why I'm questioning, or maybe you'll get to this later too. Why is it 20% and not 10%?
So there's a full tax exemption in this case rather than just a partial tax exemption.
Meaning all of the units, not just the affordable ones?
Yes.
Wow.
So can I jump in on this conversation? Because I have to say that despite everyone's best efforts, there has been a little bit of confusion in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think today we get a chance to really put this on the table and be very clear. I actually applaud your decision to make it 20% of the units at 60% of MFI citywide. That's an improvement over what we agreed to through the IZ rules. The question about whether the exemption should apply to all the units or just the abated units is something council, has to consider because that's part of the proposal. But To me, this is a very big selling point that you've made it citywide and you've bumped it to 20%. Because I had a concern coming into this that we would be once again incentivizing 80% housing, which is housing we need, but is not as compelling to me as 60 and below. So this is a change that I think, from my point of view, makes this a stronger proposal.
Thank you, Commissioner. And to also clarify some of the other public benefits that are available or would be part of approval of any projects coming through the multi-program under this interim use, developers are required to obtain an MWSB, Minority Women and Emerging Small Business Consultant, in order to work with their construction contractor in order to strive towards the city's 20% participation in construction contracting.
But that's still not a hard standard. It's still a goal.
Pardon me?
That's not a hard standard still. It's still a goal.
It is still a goal, yes. And so this would be taking real-world people with experience, with the contacts in the community of MWSB contractors and helping facilitate the opportunities for them in these projects. Additionally, as is required in the current version of the multi, we will continue that the requirement that at least 5% of the affordable units are built to be fully ADA adaptable.
Dory and the director, at some point in the future, could you come back to us with options for how we could make fully ADA adaptable or accessible units part of our basic code and not something that is included every time we add a carrot? You know, we have seen over time that, for example, eco roofs went from being a niche thing and a thing that you could get a bonus for to now being a mandate.
Right.
And that reflects a change in thinking, you know, over time. I think at some point it would be useful for us to come back to this question and say, what are some basic standards we want to bake into all of our investments around accessibility, particularly since we know that our community is going to be graying, we're going to get older. And so what should be the standard as opposed to what we can incentivize through these kinds of programs?
What is the current standard under the Americans with Disabilities Act?
Do you know that, Matt?
Or? I would need to check on that, Commissioner. I think Portland uses 2 and 3% for type A or type B, but I would need to check. And I see Commissioner Daly.
That sounds good. About right. I mean, I'm also interested in this issue. I'm curious how 5% was arrived at and if we actually know what current demands are for accessible housing and if we are looking into the future, because as Commissioner Fish has mentioned, we do have an aging population and this is going to become a greater need in decades to come. And I've been kind of ruminating lately about how, you know, our job is to plan for the future. And I think when most of us think about the future, we think about our children and our grandchildren, not people who are currently or soon to be elders and experiencing mobility challenges. So that's something I'd like to see us address.
Commissioner, just to be clear, you know, we're all learning every day about things. It's for example, through the experience of you and your son that I've learned some very powerful things about inaccessible restrooms and changing areas. And so we have tried to take those lessons and apply them to the rebuild in the Portland building. My guess is the ADA sets a standard. The question is, can we go above it? And while I think there's different ways you could get there, I think about basic things like, are all the doorways fully accessible? Because I can tell you, having looked at a lot of rental apartments in the city, there's a lot of places where you just couldn't get a wheelchair through. Are the bathrooms designed to be accessible? And I don't necessarily mean everything in the bathtub for someone that, you know, maybe is fully disabled, but can you get into the restroom? Can you get in with a wheelchair? Are there basic things? I think the council would benefit from knowing what are the standards out there. And then over time, are there ways we could strengthen our code so that all units come with a higher level of accessibility rather than using these opportunities to carve out units.
And I do think arriving at that number is a little more nuanced than looking at demand and, you know, the gap between what we have and the existing demand, because people with disabilities are more likely to be low income. So it may be that we need to bump that percentage up as far as when it comes to affordable units, because we're going to have a greater percentage of people needing accessible units than in the average population.
So the one piece I would add, I think Dory can speak to the structure and wanting to ensure that some of the affordable units sourced through the multi are also the adaptable units in the building. So it wasn't just the non-adaptable units, but on assessing the market, you know, we're in a fortunate place with respect to a better understanding of the housing stock, because Portland was one of the cities that the Census Bureau selected for the American Housing Survey in 2017. And so we're still waiting for the final results, and we can come back. But it's a much deeper survey of the housing stock that exists across the city than comes through the American Community Survey that's done every single year. The American Housing Survey is not done every year in Portland. And so a lot of the questions you're asking about our existing rental stock will be very much informed by this new data set that should be available soon, and we can do these kinds of analyses and a lot of other kinds of analyses
as well. That's exciting.
Are you done with that presentation?
Oh, no, there's a few more slides.
Okay. Commissioner Udale.
I do have one more question. So, you know, when looking at our inclusionary housing program and looking at this multi-program, I'm really interested in, are we offering an incentive that's roughly equivalent to what the property owner is giving up in rents? And when I hear tax abatement on an entire building and not just the affordable units, I do have to wonder if they're getting an extraordinarily high return. And that may not be the case, but because I've never been provided with those numbers or, you know, even a hypothetical, it's hard for me to know. What I do know is they're telling us that IZ doesn't pencil out. They're having challenges with lenders with no additional incentives, although I find that hard to believe within the central city when they're getting the tax break on the entire building.
So the inclusionary zoning program does have another additional incentives and benefits that this program doesn't have.
Yeah.
And so I would love to have a dialogue with you about how the inclusionary program was set up precisely. But we did do an analysis for your benefit to know what exactly this program is giving a developer based on our project experience versus the rent decreases that the developer would be giving us for the same period of time. So you were actually we're just going to talk about that. So you have a good sense.
We're jumping the.
We're in line with your questions, which is good. So now I'm going to turn it over to Matt to talk with you a little bit about the experience of what we've looked at from 30 projects that we had in our last multiple unit tax exemption report, which was in we reported on in 15-16. And so we did some analysis so you can see a little bit about what this means for a project. And we did do this based on the mayor's amendment this morning to cap the individual project size at 500,000. So, Matt.
Right. So we looked at, and it's not, the projects aren't from all of them aren't from last fiscal year. They were approved in multiple years, but there were 30 projects in the report that were highlighted, and we filtered out 8 of them because they wouldn't be relevant to the program proposal to try and give some comparison estimates. 4 were for buildings that had a first-year tax exemption of over $500,000, and 4 were partially affordable housing projects that had some market rate residential, so it wouldn't have been a good comparison.
Why isn't that a good? Isn't that what you're proposing here?
Because it wouldn't reflect the amount of essentially the cost of the affordable unit. because there's more than 20% of the units in the building affordable.
So I think
it would imply a lower kind of cost per affordable unit. We wanted to give some real estimates for private market rate developers that were building buildings with 20% of the units affordable.
So, Commissioner, when a nonprofit provider has a regulatory agreement with the City of Portland, they're eligible for a different type of tax exemption through the Oregon revised statutes. However, when we create that same 60-year affordability period for our regulated housing with a for-profit, they are not eligible for that tax exemption. So they would have to come in under this limited tax exemption. And so that's what Matt has pulled out is, you know, projects that would be have a larger number of affordable units in them, likely to be a for-profit developer who is developing affordable housing. I know that's...
Well, keep going. I know that Commissioner Fisher's moved to take the emergency off, so maybe this is information I can get before the next session.
Absolutely. So in the 22 projects, there were a total of 2,060 units, market rate and affordable. Of the 2,060, there were 430 affordable units, 293 at 80% of the area median income, and 137 at 60%. And when you run through the analysis, what you get is that on average, in year one property tax exemption, at the cost to the city and the county and the school districts and all the taxing jurisdictions was $10,000, about an average of about $10,000 of tax exemption per affordable unit per year. So when you look at that over a 12-month period of time, that's roughly $833 of tax exemption per month. And then when you move to looking at, well, how does that translate into the discount on rent that renters are getting in those units? Looking at the average for Central City and the average for Portland, for new construction apartment units, it's about $2,000 a month in the Central City and about $1,700 a month citywide.
What size is this? Two bedrooms?
This is just a straight average.
Oh, just
across
average.
The board.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. And so in the Central City, where you're more likely to see 5-to-1 construction or above, and thus somebody subject to the 20% of units at 80% of the median income, the affordable rent level is $1,100, and it varies based on household size, which would be about a $900 rent discount per month, which is, going back a slide, roughly comparable to the amount of tax exemption, slightly more than the amount of tax exemption that the jurisdictions are providing each month. And for the city overall, so outside the Central City included, where you would likely see buildings that are being developed at less than 5-to-1 FAR, so they would only be eligible for the 20% of units at 60% of the median income, you would see a discount of the regulated rent is $840 a month. And so you'd see a discount of about $860. Again, fairly equivalent to the amount of tax exemption being given away each month. Sorry.
And so, I think the tax exemption is actually slightly more desirable because you get it whether, you know, you only get rent if your unit is occupied, but you get that exemption
no
matter what. Okay, that answer my question. Thank you.
But Matthew, what these numbers, I maybe I'm just being thick, which I'm experiencing a lot these days. Do these numbers account for whether the abatement covers the entire building or just the abated units?
So the abatement would cover all residential in the building. Yes. So the calculations are based on the assumption that the tax exemption is applied to the affordable rental units as well as the market rate rental units.
Oh. And so these numbers then are a blended number that takes into account that the entire tax bill is being waived.
This is based on historic performance, which in the past, the tax prior to inclusionary zoning, the tax exemption was on the entire building. So we're comparing.
So what you've done is taken, I'm sorry to have to reduce it to this, but it's probably my level. So let's say the entire building under the program, the owner saves $10,000 in property taxes. I know that's let's say $100,000.
Right.
But in terms of calculating the public benefit, mm-hmm. you've then attributed the total tax abatement to the abated units, and that's the number that you've given us.
We've taken that to the affordable units, yes.
So could I jump in here? It's basically a transfer of foregone taxes to low-income renters, and it has to be an approximately equal transaction with maybe a slight benefit, as is the case here, to the landlord. Otherwise, they won't participate. It's a completely voluntary program, and there is no requirement that they do this. So for them, they're going to run a spreadsheet and decide whether or not this hurts them. On balance, it doesn't help them nor hurt them, but it absolutely helps those who are the people who are lower income in the units. So the question for us really is the trade-off of foregone revenues going to low-income renters or coming back instead at full market value into the city's general fund. And as we are in a housing emergency, it was my calculation that this is priority number one.
Can I ask a follow-up question, Shannon? So now I think I understand apples to apples here.
Mm-hmm.
The other question that's relevant, I think, and I've heard from some people, and I just want to make sure I understand this, we're making a bet that offering this inducement will encourage someone to participate because it's voluntary.
Yes.
So we're making a bet based on feedback we've heard from those developers who beat the IZ deadline, are vested, but have said if we had a program like this, they might take advantage of it, correct?
Yes, and I'm sure you'll hear from developers. We did talk with some developers who had asked for an increased incentive package, but we also felt because this package is so similar to what we had on a voluntary basis before that was working, that that we were on the right path with this proposal.
And so what would you say to someone who says, love the concept, love what you're trying to do to create some IZ, bring people into the, to create some affordable housing with units that are beat the deadline, but aren't quite sure whether the abatement should cover all the units or just the affordable units? What's from your point of view the most compelling argument to make it apply to all the units and not just the affordable units?
Well, I think it's the math that you see before you about what the value of the abatement is and what the rent discount is. And if the, because the abatement value and the rent discount are so closely aligned, as the mayor said, and there's a little bit more of a benefit to the developer, if we skew in a way that there's no benefit to the developer on a voluntary program, we will not get anyone accepting
it. And if I could add to that, and then the reason for the $500,000 cap per project is so that we aren't subsidizing, let's just call it out, we're not subsidizing any one developer, we're not overly subsidizing any one developer. This keeps it limited.
Well, except that if we've got 10,000 or more units, we're only going to allow 6,000 of them, no, 3,000 of them to have this benefit.
So it might be helpful also for you guys to discuss where the $3 million comes from, because this is a subset of a program that's already been adopted. And so maybe it's useful to maybe digress here for a moment.
Sure. We were trying to create a little bit of a, come in now, give us your proposal. Time is valuable to us. These are if these projects are ready to construct very quickly and we can get new units affordable very quickly, and that was something that was appealing. So we did want to put a value limited cap and also make sure we had room for inclusionary zoning. If for some reason you felt like this program was working and wanted to extend that cap within the foregone revenue cap, something you could do, but we were trying to encourage folks to step forward with real-life proposals sooner than later. And so that's the other reason we time-valued the proposal to only 2 years. We don't want these permits to be sitting out for such a long period of time. If people really are ready to develop, let's try to capture those now.
But what do we?
So
the other question, Shannon, someone might ask is, we bump the cap for foregone revenue in negotiations with the county from $1 million to $3 million. And the assumption here is that we're leaving money on the table, that we're not meeting the full $3 million of foregone revenue that we've agreed to. So is that true, or does this compete with some other program?
Right now, because the pipeline is so vast, we're not seeing a lot of new developments coming in under inclusionary. We went to a rolling cap, so went from a 3-year to a rolling of 15 over 5 years to be able to address development cycles, we felt like this $3 million was an adequate amount to reserve for the pre-pipeline and make sure that we still had enough available for
projects. To be clear, this is a carve-out, three of the 15, correct?
This is a carve-out of that, yes. It is not,
it
is not
new. It's not taking resources from another source.
It is not.
Right.
There's no increase in foregone revenue.
And if we adopt this, does the county have to adopt it as well?
Yes.
Okay, and that's been our that's the historical practice. We have to do them concurrently.
Within a reasonable time of each other, yes.
And what does the county think about this?
We've been having ongoing dialogues with the county for some time, and I believe the mayor has had the most recent conversations with the county.
Well, and let me address that question for a moment, because the county is a sovereign body, and they have every right to take this up, and it is conceivable, and it's happened in the past, that they may have a view of this that is either aligned with us or is not aligned, in which case they may have suggestions for improvements, and that actually sometimes results in a better piece of legislation. So that's the process we have to go through anyway. What we're essentially, the mayor has put down a marker and said, let's capture this opportunity. Here's a way we can do it. It fits within the $3 million cap. And what you're tweaking, the two tweaks that I actually really appreciate, is the $500,000 cap and expanding the number of units to 20% at 60%. Because, again, I think that's where there's a more pressing need than at 80%. We need housing at every level.
Sure.
But in terms of what you've documented as the need. So I just want to signal something to my colleagues. I want to hear the testimony, but I may withdraw my motion on the emergency clause. There are things I'm learning in this hearing that are very helpful to my decision, and I had talked to the mayor about having an additional week just to make sure I didn't miss anything. But I think you're doing a very good job explaining this proposal.
Thank you.
I'd prefer another week. This is the first time I've had a lot of this information. And so I'd also like to know from the mayor, since Director Callahan said you've most recently talked to the county, what does the county think about this?
So as Commissioner Fish mentioned, they are a sovereign body, and they have two options if we pass this. They can reject it outright, or alternatively they could amend it, in which case I presume it comes back to us for reconsideration. I'm not sure on that, Robert. Maybe you could, as legal counsel, give us some insight into that. I won't put you on the spot, but maybe in the next few minutes you could do a little bit of research. But it would be my guess that it could come back. I've had staff meeting with the chair and all of the commissioners at Multnomah County. I don't think we've received a solid commitment to a yes or a no vote. I think we have received a solid commitment to hear this conversation out, and I certainly intend to go with the Housing Bureau and others to answer any further questions that they may have.
So, Commissioner
Fritz, they have asked for one thing. They've asked for time, and given the way we've structured this, this gives them approximately a month to do their evaluation, talk to their own staff, communicate with us, communicate with constituents and others who would have an interest. Sorry, Commissioner.
So my staff has been briefing me on this, and frankly, the more that I've learned about this, the more I like it. What I'm going to do, though, because it occurred to me that Director Shannon, if you don't mind me being informal, you call me Nick, I'll call you Shannon, that you had mentioned earlier that there were projects in the pipeline and a sense of urgency that we might have this tool, let's capture them. What I might suggest is that I'll withdraw my request to take the emergency clause off and just ask the mayor to set this over a week with the emergency clause, because if the council's satisfied next week, we would have the benefit of an emergency clause on it. And I think there's some urgency. If the council continues to have questions, they retain the option to seek more time. I think that's that's a better approach to this, because if we do concur next week in this program, I don't think a 30-day delay is warranted if you're telling us there are projects that might be willing to participate. So I'm going to withdraw my motion, and I will urge my colleagues, I would urge the mayor just to set this over a week.
So the emergency clause has been removed at the request of Commissioner
The amendment.
I'm sorry, the amendment.
I'm withdrawing my amendment, and I will urge the mayor to set it over for a week.
Very good. So Commissioner Fritz.
I'm not committing to voting for it as an emergency next week either. Commissioner Fish, when you and I worked so hard with the county on setting up the multi-program or the revisions to it, we were really clear that we wanted to be in full collaboration with the county and indeed with the school districts because they're affected also. So I will want to hear from the county what they're... I would prefer not to do it as a... here's what we've done, you can take it or leave it or amend it. It would be much better to have some kind of agreement ahead of time, in my opinion.
I'm ever the optimist. Maybe it's just a function of getting older, but I think by next week we may have greater clarity on that question, and I think it may be enough to satisfy your concerns.
Well, it would be nice to have a briefing in the interim. Thank you, although I know we have budget meetings all next week, so that might be challenging.
Mayor, is that an approach that you would concur with?
So, to a point, I mean, first of all, I'd like to ask, is there any practical implications for this to set it over for 1 week?
No, I don't believe so. I mean, I think you could also decide what you wanted to do next week, whether you wanted to pass it on an emergency basis or otherwise. So you could always add a remove a clause that you want.
So I'm certainly willing to wait 1 week to have people have any further questions that are raised in the context of this hearing or otherwise addressed. I'm less persuaded by the argument that we should wait to see whether or not our county colleagues agree with us completely on this ordinance. We have a housing emergency. We have the Housing Bureau here at the City of Portland. We have very limited tools at our disposal to be able to reach back into the existing pipeline of projects that are permitted and ready to go that were vested prior to inclusionary housing, and I'm not prepared to give that tool up just because somebody gets... you know, concerns about whether or not we should do that. But if there is clarity coming from the county that they do not believe that the dollar-for-dollar trade-off between foregone future tax revenues is worth the discount to low-income people so that they can live in our community, I'll hear that conversation, but I'll never buy into it. So I just want to be really clear. I see this as a matter of urgency. I see this tool as being one that has been successfully used by the council previously. I can see no reason why we would not do this unless we don't really believe it's a housing emergency. Now, I'm willing to use whatever diplomatic skills and call in on friendships and everything else I can at the county to get their support. But frankly, I would hope that they would enthusiastically embrace a project like this and tools like this to get some immediate help for people who are lower income in the middle of a housing crisis.
So, Mayor, I've been on this body for too long, and so I'm just going to offer just a slight rebuttal. Having spent a lot of time in Salem working to get the authorization for these programs, having spent the better part of a year with the county chair, then County Chair Jeff Kogan, working out the big look and coming up with a comprehensive rewrite that was acceptable to the county and the city, having spent time with the county assessor, who's a wild card in this, as you know from your county chair experience, the county assessor doesn't actually have to go along with anybody on a tax abatement, as we learned a number of years ago. I actually think we're on the verge of doing something with a broad base of support. I think your approach here of using multi and the tweaks that you proposed have convinced me it's the right approach. I think it's a more sustainable victory if we convince a few other people to join us, but that won't be the determining factor.
No disagreement whatsoever. But I don't want to hear no if they have a better strategy and know of a tool that the Portland Housing Bureau is unaware of. I'm all ears.
Yep.
Commissioner Fritz. Sorry.
Thank you, Matt. Chair Kefouri is second to nobody in her history of working for affordable housing. So the fact that she's not enthusiastically on board of this already is of concern to me. Let me be very clear. If Chair Kefouri is not on board with it next week, I will not vote for it as an emergency.
All right. We have public testimony on this item. Is that the end of your presentation?
I thought you were going to show me what the multi utility has been. In terms of how much of the cap have we been up to?
Oh, as far as with on the current cap?
Yeah.
For 2017, I don't have the numbers on at the top, but it's only been for projects approved through inclusionary housing, so it is not a great number.
So could you give me in the week between this week and next on what has been the utilization since we did it back in 2000, whatever it was?
Yeah, absolutely. So 2012 is when we implemented the program after the big look, and I can give you a full spectrum of all the foregone revenue.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Public testimony. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Commissioner Udaly. I apologize.
I just wanted to express my general support and thankfulness for your efforts and for the Housing Bureau. I have not been lobbied by the county and met with the chairs recently last week, and this was not a topic of conversation. My understanding of where we're at with this item is limited, but I don't believe there's necessarily a disagreement on what we are ultimately proposing right now. I think there was some confusion, so I'm really hoping that we can come to a speedy agreement with the county. I mean, one thing that we haven't talked about yet, this $10,000 a unit tax abatement is a lot of money, but we're spending $200,000 of housing bond money to create one unit. So I really think we need to look at the larger picture. And I just want to go on record saying a couple things. As we know, we had a mad dash of developers getting in applications before our inclusionary housing program took effect. That's hundreds of developments. That's thousands, as many as 19,000 units of housing being built at market rate, which without a number is, I think, somewhat meaningless to the public. The housing that we're getting from the private market is housing that's only affordable to households at 120% of median family income or above. That's, I think, 95% of the housing that's been built in the private market over the last few years. There are proponents of density and development who want us to believe that our housing crisis is just a simple question of supply and demand, which is false. Because when you have a gross product mismatch between what is being supplied at 120, which is above the median income, and the demand, which is below 100 median family income, it doesn't. We may see softening at the top of the market, and in fact, we see fairly high vacancy at the top of the market. It does not make any difference to people earning 80% or less of MFI. So I just really wanted to take this opportunity to say that publicly, because I'm really tired of the oversimplification of this issue that's going on. And just another thing to consider is, yes, there's foregone revenue, or yes, the landlords are, or not, sorry, the developers or the property owners are giving up rent, but we're actually helping them create housing that will be rented. It's tough to perhaps nearly impossible to build at 60% to 80% right now, given just the cost of land and the expensive construction. So I think anything we can do within reason to help them deliver the housing we actually need is worthwhile. And finally, I would like to add that I also am very interested in the possibility of bumping affordable housing developments in the private market ahead in the queue as an additional incentive.
Commissioner, can I just make one comment?
Please.
Because I too believe the mayor has struck the right balance on this, and I think we can work out our differences within the family. There is a view that is getting some traction in the media. I call it trickle-down housing. And the idea is that if we continue to build at 95, if we continue to have 95% or more of our housing at the luxury level, that there will over time be a benefit to those people shut out of the markets. What I have said to some people I respect who adhere to that view is that that's not much solace for people who are today shut out of the market, which is why this council under this mayor's leadership has been focusing on putting subsidies and incentives into housing that is not being met by the marketplace. That's housing at below 60% MFI. And number two, the idea that if you take the logic of what some economists have said, what they're really saying is that the person who is now can't find a sufficient number of luxury apartments to live in is going to go out to 158th and Powell and displace someone who's in a low-income housing unit run by Joe Weston. That is so preposterous on its face that it's not worthy of our discussion. I hope at some point we can recalibrate this discussion so that we say, let the private sector build whatever they want. Let's use some incentives to encourage them to add some affordable units, and then let's put as many dollars as we have into meeting the needs of people shut out of the market. That seems to me to be a sensible approach.
Yeah, that's well said, Commissioner Fish. And if I could just add one benefit here, is these are vested, a lot of them are permitted, and they're ready to go. And so there's an opportunity for us to act quickly. So part of what we would be buying down with that foregone revenue that's focused on the affordability is also timeliness. We could have housing online within a year for some of these projects, which is 2 to 3 times faster than we're going to get with a project starting from scratch.
Yes, thank you, Mayor.
Good. So there's people who've been waiting very, very patiently to testify. Could we call, how many people do we have?
We have two.
All right, so if you could call them up, please.
Yeah. Gwen Baldwin and Mary Seip.
And while they're making their way up for their 3 minutes at the microphone, there were a couple of people who wanted to be here today and could not, as we had to change. We changed the schedule. They wanted to provide oral testimony, so they provided written testimony in support of the ordinance, including the Urban League, the Welcome Home Coalition, and Mark Madden of WC Properties. And I apologize to those folks for the schedule change, but we do have their written testimony in support of the ordinance. Good afternoon.
Go ahead. Okay. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the commission. Gwen Baldwin here representing Oregon Locus. Oregon Locus, as you may know, is a coalition of developers and investors who focus on walkable, livable urban development throughout the state. And I want to first thank the mayor and his staff for engaging in this conversation with Oregon Locus over a year ago. And it is not easy to find the right balance or the components of balance. But I really appreciate the willingness to work with it and to take the concepts and hand them to Interim Director Shannon Callahan and Assistant Director Matt Schibbold to bring to you this program today. We think that this hits the mark in a number of areas that are really important. The balance between affordability and the duration of the tax exemption is important. The citywide application is important. The limited time duration to really incentivize action earlier than later in that queue is really important. We had two concerns and questions, one of which has been answered in a follow-up conversation with the Housing Bureau related to whether all the regulations and requirements for this program were within Section 3 or whether other aspects of the multi-program applied, which I think Commissioner Fish gets to some of your question about the number, you know, the affordable units versus all units, as well as is it 5-to-1 FAR built versus 5-to-FAR zoned and when that is applicable. Getting clarity from them, we are satisfied that that component of where that threshold is based on built, which is appropriate and will be a more workable program. The other area that we were wanting to draw attention to, and you've had some of that discussion today, is this program is measured against the status quo. Measured against those who will move through the process with the projects that have been vested. And what are the incentives, what are the assists that can encourage inclusion of affordability in those projects as they move forward in the next couple of years? And my understanding is that there has always been a priority on the 60% MFI, and understandably why that is so.
I would urge consideration of maybe dropping that inclusionary rate for the 60 to create an even higher incentive for people to incorporate that. I think this is a well-considered and well-thought-out program. I think they've done a really great job.
Gwen, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because you're very thoughtful on these issues. If we adopt the proposal that is now on the table as amended with mm-hmm. the with the cap, with the 20%, 20%, and the 10 years, do you anticipate that there are developers ready to take advantage of it?
I think there are those who would give a very serious look to it. I can't give a guarantee that there is somebody in the queue who is ready to grab this, in part because we just got the details of this. Everybody is, in fact, looking at it.
Okay.
I do think that the dynamic that, all programs right now related to housing sit in is that uncertainty. Construction costs continue to go up. Equity investors continue to be somewhat skittish and